The year was 1605. The place, London, England. Queen Elizabeth had just died 2 years previously, and now King James was on the throne. This is the King James that Jamestown, Virginia would be named after, and also the king that would commission the King James Bible. But all that was still in the future. Sir Ferdinando Gorges was the owner of the Plymouth Company, a commercial enterprise which sought to establish colonies in the New England area of the New World. Sir Gorges commissioned Captain George Weymouth to sail to the New World and explore the coastland of present-day Maine and Massachusetts. So Captain Weymouth set sail for America, and after many weeks, he arrived at the coast of New England. As he sailed along the shoreline, he saw a group of 5 young Indian braves. Thinking that his financial backers would probably like to see some Indians, he captured these 5 young men and sailed with them back to England. One of the Indians was from the Patuxet tribe, the most influential tribe in the Plymouth area, and his name was Squanto. Well, once they got back to England, Weymouth presented the 5 Indians to his boss, Sir Gorges, and Sir Gorges immediately realized that these young men could be of tremendous commercial advantage to him. But he was not a cruel man, so he decided to befriend these men and let them live with him. He would teach them the English language, and he would teach them the ways of the English people, and then eventually he would take them back to their home so they could be translators and guides that would help other Englishmen from his company set up colonies in the New World. Well, Squanto, being one of these young men, ended up living in England for 9 years, but he finally got a chance to go back home. And the man who would take him home was none other than Captain John Smith. It turned out that while Squanto had been in England, Captain John Smith had established the Jamestown colony in Virginia after having his life saved by Pocahontas. And now Smith was going to be making another voyage to the New World, so he took Squanto along to help him. And as a reward for his help, Squanto would then be taken back to his home. So in 1614, after 9 years away from home, Squanto at last got to return to his village, which was near present-day Plymouth, Massachusetts. And what a reunion this must have been. No doubt his friends and family had long assumed that he was dead, so they were overjoyed to see him alive and to hear about all his adventures that he'd had while he was in England. But all this joy was to be short-lived. See, when Smith sailed away from Plymouth to go back to England, he left behind another ship commanded by a man by the name of Thomas Hunt. And Thomas Hunt had instructions to carry out some trade negotiations with the Indians before he also left to go back to England. But as Hunt was completing these trade deals, he got a sinister idea. He realized that there was cargo that was a lot more lucrative than fish and beaver pelts, and that was human slaves. So right before he set sail to go back to England under the pretense of making one final trade negotiation, he lured on board his ship both Squanto and 26 other young Indian men from the Patuxet and neighboring Nauset tribes. And once these young men were on board his ship, he threw them into the hold and set sail for home. Squanto had been kidnapped again. Well, back on shore, when the Nauset and the Patuxet tribes realized that 27 of their young men had been kidnapped, they developed an intense hatred for the white man. The Naussets burned at least one French ship, which later tried to land there, and the Patuxets developed a fierce reputation for killing every white man they could find. Well, meanwhile, out at sea, the wicked Captain Hunt realized that if he took his captives back to England to sell, John Smith would find out, and he didn't want that to happen, so he took them to the port city of Malaga in Spain. And once he was there, he began selling them off as quickly as he could. But before he could sell all of them, some friars from a local monastery found out what he was up to, and they rescued the rest of them. And fortunately, one of the ones they rescued was Squanto. The friars took Squanto and the others to their monastery to live. And in spite of the language barrier, the friars did their best to teach the Indians about their religion. And they also gave them their freedom. Well, Squanto stayed at the monastery for a while, but he was also eager to return home. And he knew that the best plan was to try to get back to England somehow and then join another one of the voyages back to America. So he found a ride on a fishing boat, and he soon arrived back in London. He was hired by the Newfoundland Company to go to the New World and offer his services to the governor of the colony there in present-day Canada. So he sailed to Newfoundland, and he began working there, all the while looking for a way to try to get back to his home on Cape Cod. And before long, he met Captain Thomas Dermer, who had worked with John Smith. It turns out that Smith and the Plymouth Company were still trying to find a way to set up a colony in the Plymouth area, but now they were having a lot of trouble because the Indians were really hostile, thanks to Captain Thomas Hunt. But Dermer thought that if Squanto went with him to Cape Cod, that maybe Squanto could keep things peaceful. Well, Squanto was thrilled to be able to finally have passage home again, so he jumped at the idea of accompanying Dermer on his new venture. So together, they set sail south from Newfoundland and sailed along the coast of New England toward Cape Cod. No doubt, Squanto became more excited by the day as the landscape started becoming more and more familiar. Soon he could see the outskirts of where he used to hunt and fish and play as a child. Finally, as they rounded a bend, he shouted, "That's it, there's my home, stop there." Well, as soon as the ship touched the shoreline, Squanto jumped out and ran into the forest, calling the names of his family and friends. But no one answered. There was only the sound of the wind in the trees. He walked further along a familiar path until he came to a clearing where his village had been. The only thing left of what had once been his home was a large open area. He walked up and down all the footpaths, but there was no one else there. Slowly and sadly, he walked back to the ship, and in a bewildered voice, he said to Captain Dermer, "They're all gone. I must be the only Patuxet left." Well, the Patuxets were gone, but the Nausets were not, and soon they began showing up and showing great hostility toward Dermer and his men, so they were going to have to leave quickly. But Squanto decided he was not going to sail away from his homeland yet again. So he said goodbye to Dermer, and he began to wander around looking for a new place to live. Finally, he made his way to the nearby Wampanoag tribe, who said they could live with him. The year was 1619. The very next year, 1620, was to become one of the most important years in American history. As you well know, that was the year when, halfway around the world, not in Plymouth, Massachusetts, but in Plymouth, England, a small ship called the Mayflower set sail for the New World. Right off the bat, the Mayflower pilgrims encountered difficulty. Originally, the pilgrims had planned on coming over on two ships, the Mayflower and the Speedwell, but the name Speedwell was the exact opposite of what that second ship turned out to be. Several days after setting sail, they had to return to port to repair leaks in the Speedwell. And that happened twice. So finally, it was decided that all the cargo and all the people would have to be jammed on board the Mayflower. When the Mayflower finally set sail, they had lost several weeks of time, meaning that instead of arriving in late fall, they would arrive in the dead of winter. Well, for the next 7 weeks, the Mayflower pilgrims endured awful conditions aboard ship. There were 102 of them, and they had to crowd into a small space below the deck that was only about the size of a volleyball court. They were not allowed to go above deck because the stormy, choppy seas made it way too dangerous. One young man who did sneak up on deck was quickly washed overboard, and it was a miracle that he actually managed to grab one of the ropes that was trailing behind the ship so they could pull him out. Between the darkness and the dampness and the crying babies and the seasickness and the smell, it must have been just awful. But they finally made it. Their governor, William Bradford, later wrote, quote, "Being thus arrived in a good harbor, they fell upon their knees and blessed the God of heaven who had brought them over the vast and furious ocean and delivered them from all the perils and miseries thereof." They found that they had been blown off course, but by less than 100 miles, which wasn't really too bad in those days. They'd been aiming for the mouth of the Hudson River, which was right by Long Island in present-day New York City, but instead, they had landed at Cape Cod. They turned around and started trying to sail south, but the sea quickly became very choppy again, so they decided just to stay where they were. Some of the men went ashore and began looking for a place to settle. Well, almost immediately, the landing party came under Indian attack, but when the pilgrims fired their muskets, the Indians ran away, so no one was hurt on either side. And then it started snowing, so they had that to contend with. But before long, they came to a certain area, and they couldn't believe their eyes. There before them lay 20 acres of cleared farmland ready to be planted, although there were no signs of anyone having been there for several years. Not only was the soil rich and fertile, but there was not one but four creeks nearby flowing with sweet-tasting spring water. They hurried back to the Mayflower to tell the others the news, and soon they began building their new colony at this site. They would call it Plymouth, after the last place they had been in England. Well, by now, it was December, and the coming winter would prove to be a very difficult time for the pilgrims. Because they had arrived late, and because they were not farmers or woodsmen, they had a really hard time building adequate shelters and growing enough food. Soon, they would enter into a time which they would come to call the general sickness, and they started dying off. Six died in December, 8 in January, 17 in February, and 13 in March. By the end of that first winter, nearly half of their original number of 102 were dead. But then, something absolutely amazing would happen next. One day in mid-March, as the leaders of the Plymouth colony were meeting in their big meeting house, they looked out the window and saw one lone, tall Indian walking toward their building. So they hurried out to meet him, and as they stood staring at each other, the Indian said, "Welcome." With a puzzled look on their faces, the pilgrim said, "Well, welcome." And then the Indian said, "You got any beer?" Still in shock, the pilgrims replied, "No, but we do have a little bit of brandy." So they got the Indian some brandy and some food, and after he had eaten and drunk what they gave him, he began telling them in broken English that his name was Samoset, and that he was a leader of the Algonquin Indians who lived in Maine, and he was visiting there in the Plymouth area. He had learned to speak English from some of the English fishermen who had come to Maine to fish. And then the pilgrims began to ask him about some of the local Indian tribes, and what he told them next left them utterly amazed. He told them that where they had settled had previously been the home of the large, hostile Patuxet tribe who had murdered every white man they could find. But then 4 years ago, a plague, maybe smallpox or tuberculosis or both, had broken out in that tribe and killed every man, woman, and child. And all the other tribes had been afraid to move in because they were afraid that some great evil spirits had wiped out the Patuxets. So this beautiful, cleared land where they were living literally belonged to no one. And then the story got even better. He told them there was one Patuxet left, and he was staying with the same tribe that Samoset was staying with. And believe it or not, that Patuxet spoke fluent English and had actually lived in England. Would they like to meet him? Oh, yes, very much, they said. So Samoset left, and a few days later, he came back with Squanto. As Squanto talked with the pilgrims and got to know them, he began to take pity on them because he could see how helpless they were since they knew so little about surviving in this new land. He looked around at these familiar streams and forests where he'd grown up, and perhaps in some small way he was starting to feel like maybe he had a family again. In any case, when it was time for Samoset to go, Squanto chose to stay. He wasted no time in teaching the pilgrims what they needed to know in order to survive. He taught them how to stalk deer and how to fish, and he taught them what crops grew well and how to grow corn the Indian way, using fish for fertilizer. He taught them that eels were a very good source of food and showed them how to squish them out of the mud with their bare feet. He showed the children which berries to pick so they could help out. And he even showed the men how to trap beavers and harvest the pelts so that they'd have a product to trade commercially. And in addition to helping provide for them, Squanto helped to protect them. The Indians who had attacked the pilgrim landing party were from the Nauset tribe, so Squanto was able to explain to them that the pilgrims were peaceful and they shouldn't be attacked, but rather would make good trading partners. And he even acted as an interpreter during their trade negotiations. Well, thanks to Squanto, the Plymouth colony flourished all that spring and summer. And there was even a wedding in May between Edward Winslow and Susanna White, who had each lost their spouse in the general sickness. You know the story from here. That October, Governor Bradford proclaimed a day of public thanksgiving for the bountiful harvest that they had enjoyed. They invited the nearby Wampanoag tribe to join them, so 90 Indians celebrated with the pilgrims, and there was so much food and feasting and celebration that the festivities lasted for 3 days. Thus began a national holiday, which still continues to this very day. Governor Bradford would go on to describe Squanto as, quote, a special instrument sent of God for their good beyond their expectation. So let's summarize Squanto's amazing story. As a young man, he was kidnapped and taken to England, where he was taught the king's English and the ways of the English people. While he was in England, Captain John Smith founded the Jamestown colony in Virginia. And then after Smith returned to England, he began to make plans to establish a colony at Cape Cod. Squanto was the perfect person for John Smith to take with him to scout out things for this new colony. And after the scouting was finished, Squanto was allowed to return home. But then Squanto was kidnapped again, along with 26 other men by Thomas Hunt. Hunt took his captives to Spain to sell, but a few of them, including Squanto, were rescued by local Catholic friars. Squanto was set free, made his way back to England, and hired by a company to come to Newfoundland. But unbeknownst to Squanto, while he had been in Europe, a deadly plague had swept through his tribe and killed every man, woman, and child. So when he finally made it back home, nobody was there. Feeling despondent, he moved in with a nearby tribe, but then he heard about this small, struggling English colony, which had been blown off course and landed in the territory of his childhood home. Moving in with this fledgling colony, he took them on as his newly adopted family. He taught them everything they needed to know to survive in the new world and literally brought them back from the brink of death. You don't get a much more amazing story than that. And this proves that it's not just a cliche to sing, America, America, God shed his grace on thee. This month, we will celebrate that same holiday that Governor Bradford first proclaimed almost 400 years ago to give thanks to God for his continuing provision and protection, which he so amazingly displayed ever since the time of Squanto and the Pilgrims. So we've seen what an unbelievable blessing from God Squanto was to the Pilgrims. But in one major way, they may have even been a bigger blessing to him, and I'll explain what I mean. See, Squanto was probably raised to believe in many gods, From what we know of Native American religion, he probably believed in the rain god, the tree god, and who knows how many other gods who inhabited the various forces of nature around him. When he was kidnapped the first time and taken to England, he saw that the Church of England did play a prominent role in English social life, but there's nothing to suggest that anyone whom Squanto encountered made any particular effort to get him to attend an English church or that he had any desire to do so. But the second time he was kidnapped, the circumstances were very different. Rather than being taken in by an English gentleman who would treat him well and then enable him to return home, he faced the prospect of being sold into slavery and probably taken to Africa, where he would have been worked inhumanely until he just finally dropped dead. So to be the recipient of the extraordinary act of kindness from the Spanish friars who rescued him, while possibly placing themselves at great risk or incurring great expense on his behalf, this really got his attention. He didn't have to speak Spanish to realize that these men had performed an act of great unselfishness for him and had most likely saved his life. In spite of the language barrier, they were probably able to communicate with him that they did it because they loved God. Their God was so different than his. Their God wasn't a tree or a lightning bolt. Their God made the trees and the lightning bolts and everything else. Squanto had never thought about a God as being something you loved, only something you feared. But these men loved their God, and they told him that their God loved him. They also told him that this God had become a man and that he had given men a book about himself. Well, by the time Squanto left the monastery, we have no way to know how much he actually understood about the gospel, but he knew that he had met some people who worshiped a God very different from his own, a God who loved and who could be loved. But at this point in his life, Squanto was still mostly focused on just getting back home. He made his way back to London and then to Newfoundland, but then the day he had longed for turned out to be his worst nightmare, because when he finally returned home, he found that his whole tribe was dead. This had to have been the lowest day of his life. Even during both of his kidnappings, he had always held out the hope of going home. But now that he was, quote-unquote, home, the home itself was gone. He must have become simply numb emotionally. And even after he moved in with the Wampanoags, he just went through the motions, feeling nothing but helplessness and hopelessness. But I think that after the shock wore off, Squanto began remembering back to his days in Spain, to some of the things that the friars had probably told him. Things like the fact that God had sent them to rescue him, that God knew when he was sad or in trouble, and that God would listen when he prayed. So I think that at this point, Squanto cried out to God to come to him and to help him. And the reason I think that is because of what happened next. God didn't just send Squanto a missionary, or even a dozen missionaries. He sent Squanto literally a boatload of supercharged Calvinists who weren't just people out doing their good deed for the day. These were some of the most godly people ever to grace the pages of church history, and God blew their ship off course just enough to land them right on Squanto's doorstep. They desperately needed him, but he needed them even more. That's why I think that on that wonderful day when Samoset introduced Squanto to the pilgrims, I think it was more than just pity for the pilgrims and a desire to be back in his old neighborhood that made Squanto want to stay. I think he sensed a spiritual bond with these people, one that he could never share with the pagan Wampanoags. Though they had few possessions, these people had lots of copies of that same book that the friars had talked about, that book about God. Perhaps they would even teach him to read it. Everything they said was filled with phrases and sentences from that book. They had the same kindness in their eyes that the friars had when they rescued Squanto from the slave auction. And even though they were so poor, they had joy unlike anything Squanto had ever seen among the rich nobility of England. So Squanto stayed. And as Bradford said, he was a blessing to the pilgrims beyond what they could possibly imagine. But even more important than the physical blessing he was to them was the spiritual blessing they were to him. He got to hear them pray. He could attend their church services. And can you imagine the beautiful, pure, in-depth doctrine he would hear? He heard them sing, and he probably learned to join in. Knowing the pilgrims, I bet they taught him to read. And I'm sure they helped him to memorize scripture, whether he could read it or not. I wish we had some sort of record or memoir of Squanto's spiritual journey, but I doubt any exists. However, Bradford does record that when Squanto was on his deathbed, he confirmed his desire to go to the Englishman's God in heaven. So I think we'll see Squanto in heaven. I know we'll see the pilgrims. So this Thanksgiving, one of the many things we can thank God for is the fact that we can look forward to the day when we'll meet all these people and we'll get to learn even more about the marvelous works of God.